I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/spoken today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Celebrating 35 years of creativity and collaboration, the Vail Dance Festival returns July 28th through August 7th with 12 thrilling performances and numerous special events, including live podcast recordings of conversations on dance, all across the beautiful Vail Valley. Don't miss the legendary Martha Graham Dance Company, LA Dance Project, Music from the Soul, Ballet X, Dance Aspen, and an all-star cast of festival artists from New York City Ballet, American Ballet Theater, the Royal Danish Ballet, Boston Ballet, and many more. Tickets for our live podcast recordings are now available at veildance.org/conversations-on-dance or click the link in the show notes. Tickets for festival performances are also available now at veildance.org. See you this summer. I'm Rebecca King Ferraro.
And I'm Michael Sean Breeden, and you're listening to Conversations on Dance. Today on Conversations on Dance, we are joined by acclaimed ballerina Misty Copeland and Emmy Award-winning TV producer and writer Leila Fayaz. We talked to Misty and Leila about how they first met as young ballerinas at American Ballet Theatre, reconnecting to create Life in Motion productions, the stories they want to tell in their new work, and their first short film, Flower, which recently premiered at Tribeca Film Festival. For more information on Flower and Life in Motion productions, follow at Oakland Flower Film on Instagram. Leila and Misty, thank you both for joining us. We're so excited to talk to you about your collaboration on the film Flower. But before we got into that, Leila, we haven't had you on the podcast yet, so we've got to get a little bit of background with you. Mm-hmm. But Misty, we haven't had you on in, I think, 6 years. So, a few things have happened with you. But one that we always like to talk about, just because it's such a joyful thing, is you're a new mother. And Rebecca's also a new mother. So it's just something we always love to bring up on the pod. How has that experience been for you?
I mean, I'm looking down right now because I'm actually texting my husband to tell him to like keep Jackson away while we film or we record. It's been everything and more than I imagined. Like I come from a big family. I'm one of six kids and I always knew that I wanted a family, but as a woman, as an artist, as an athlete, like it's so hard to find that balance and to make the time and still be able to continue on in your career and have it's so complicated. And, and I feel fortunate to have found the time, and COVID was really a blessing in disguise for me for so many reasons. You know, having my son Jackson, I wrote two books. Leila and I really got Life in Motion off the ground because we had, the time to really focus on it. I started my foundation. So it's been a very productive time. And Flower, was birthed during that time, which was also another blessing in disguise with all of the challenges we had because of the pandemic.
Oh, there's so much to talk about. Oh my gosh. I just think you've been everywhere with all these sorts of things, but I do wonder, like, what has it been like? I'm retired. So in my body, I can't even imagine. Like, I tried to do a fifth position the other day and I was like, wow, what is this? This is very foreign. And I feel like we maybe had our, I had my son August 1st last year. Was you around the same time?
April.
Okay.
2nd.
So how is that body feeling getting back into ballet for you?
I'm really taking my time. You know, it's been a journey for me. I had my insane injury about 10 years ago, and I'm still, you know, the injury was really to prevent anything from happening further. I had 6 stress fractures in my tibia, and so it didn't relieve the pain. So I'd been dancing the last, you know, before the pandemic, the last 10 years with severe pain. So I'm really kind of taking a step back and taking my time in terms of what that looks like for physicality and for my body. You know, having the opportunity to do all of these other things that are really working towards the same goal as I, you know, my whole career has been when I'm on stage. And so all of that to say, I'm not doing fifth position right now.
Okay. That makes me feel better. No, I'm just kidding.
I really was taking my time and finding like a new fitness journey and we'll see when I get back on stage.
Right. Layla, we want to hear a little bit about your journey with fifth position. I'd love to just hear, since it's your first time on the pod.
Yeah.
What's your initial background in dance? Tell us a little bit about that.
I started dancing when I was 10 or 11 years old. I'd taken gymnastics before that. I was always a little too tall for gymnastics either way, but I loved it. And then my mom was like, oh, you can't do this anymore. Some of your friends are getting injured. I'm nervous. And now I understand as a mom, because I have a daughter in gymnastics, I can't even watch her do gymnastics. I get so nervous. But so she made me stop and then was like, well, there's dance classes instead. I'll put you in ballet. And as soon as I started, I just like loved it. I mean, I was like a 10-year-old with like 6-year-olds because I didn't have any training. So I was like much bigger and like it was awkward, but I didn't care. I was in the zone immediately and I found, you know, a way to express myself, a way to get out of the house and kind of have my own world that was just mine. And I loved it. And so I did that and I progressed really quickly because I did have natural ability, you know, good feet, as they say, and a little hyperextension in the legs, like all those things they used to say were great for dance. And so I ended up getting a scholarship to go to the Herod Conservatory. So I trained at the Herod Conservatory for 2 years. And then I won the very first ever Youth America Grand Prix competition. It was the first year they ever did it. Larissa Sevelyan was like, yes, Larissa was going around to the different schools looking for people and telling them to, you know, enter this competition. I did it. I won regionals and then nationals, and that I got the Grand Prix, and that came with a studio company contract. And I actually turned the studio company contract down because that summer beforehand, I had gone to the Vail Valley, the summer program there. And I had an offer from the Stuttgart Ballet to train at their John Cranko school. They were going to take me to the Prix de Lausanne. Yeah. And so I had already confirmed with them, like, this is what I was doing. So I turned down studio company and I went to Germany for 2 months. And it was really difficult, I have to say, because there was culture shock. I was like 16 years old on my own, you know, didn't really like know what was going on and didn't assimilate very easily into the school because they had all been there the entire year. And I just stepped in the summer. And then there were like other things. So it was hard emotionally, I think, for me. And then I came back just for a 2-week break to the States. And I went to a program at Kotsbahn. That, you know, Martine Van Hamel and Kevin McKenzie had just started this dance program there. And I mean, now it's a much bigger thing. But again, one of the first years they were doing it. So I went, and when I was there every day, like either Kevin McKenzie or John Meehan, who at the time was the artistic director of the studio company, would come to me at lunch, take me aside and tell me why I needed to join the studio company. Like I needed to change my mind. And I'm like, well, I have all my stuff in Germany. And like, I'm only 16. I don't know what's going on to make these big life decisions. But one of the things that they told me that they, you know, one of the things they were using to try to lure me was, we want to take you and one other dancer to China with the main company. Just you two. We're going to choose you guys out of the studio company to go. And her name is Misty Copeland. So it's just funny because, like, you know, full circle now. And even then, like, I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. So they changed my mind and I ended up going to New York and joining the studio company. And I was sleeping on another dancer from the company's couch. Adrian Schulte. And I met Misty the first week I was there and we just immediately hit it off. And we went to China like what, a week later, Misty?
Yeah.
And we had all these adventures and we became best friends immediately. And we wrote this little book on our first tour with the company to China. And it's somewhere, we still don't know where it is. We think it's maybe with Misty's mother-in-law in storage or something. But
what was the book? Like, what was it about? Just like a diary kind of?
Yeah, it was like about our adventures as the two youngest people in ABT at the time, you know, like, and how we were trying to fit in and trying to get, you know, noticed and trying to do our best. And obviously it was just really intimidating and difficult and just, yeah, we were playing Mariah Carey in the hotel room at night and eating Pringles because there was no food that we could eat because we were afraid we were going to get like poisoned or something.
I'm a huge lamb, so I know very much about Mariah shepherding you through the artistic experience. So
I feel like publishing houses are listening, saying like, how do we find this book and get it out there? Because that sounds so fun.
But also, I just think it just makes me think of like, it's ballet is so unique in that way. Like, I think it's so special that we, you know, most of our friends, many of our friends are people we've known for literal decades at this point. And you just have that implicit trust when you are in this point in your life right now where you're working together. It's like you've built years of trust and like dependency on one another. So it's so cool that you guys are able to collaborate in this way. But let's circle back to that. There's so much to talk about. We want to hear just quickly, Misty, about your book writing. I mean, this book that you wrote about your mentor, Raven Wilkinson, what made you feel like that was an important story for you to get out there?
Yeah, you know, it started, Raven and I had such an incredible relationship. You know, learning about her story at a late stage in my career, I was a soloist. I had been a soloist for maybe four or five years already at that point at ABT, and learning about her story gave me this different sense of kind of purpose and hope for not only my future but the future of so many Black and Brown dancers. And I felt like I had a different type of responsibility than I ever thought I did in kind of carrying out. You know, the efforts of what so many Black and Brown dancers intended for their careers or, you know, dreamed that they could have had only, you know, half of what I have. And it's just was amazing to actually meet her and share something really special. But it started with my book, Black Ballerinas, in wanting to be able to highlight different dancers, whether or not they had gone on to dance in professional companies, but showing the journey of all of these dancers and that it's been this collective effort to get me to this point and so many other Black and Brown dancers, and that they really are a part of ballet history, not Black ballet history. Ballet history as a whole. And I got to give a little glimpse of Raven's story as she was profiled in that book. And then it came, this idea kind of grew. I had wanted to write a book about Raven for many years, but it transformed into it being about her impact on me and on the ballet world. Mm-hmm. And more about how she kind of pushed me to see more in myself. And it was such an emotional journey. She had passed already. I was pregnant at the time when I was writing it. I gave birth, finished the book like 2 days later. It was such a crazy emotional and hectic time, but I think it just added to the book in like a really meaningful and beautiful way.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I like this kind of theme of, you know, Missy, you were dealing with an injury, with, you know, being pregnant, and then not having dancing in your life in that moment, and then kind of like finding these other ways to connect. And I think, Layla, kind of the same, right? Finding ways, how can we all still connect to ballet? And that's something that Michael and I certainly feel all the time too, which is why we like to do this. So how did the idea of you guys coming together and collaborating in a new way come about?
I'm like, who wants to start?
I mean, so like I stopped dancing professionally after only, well, 1 year in ABT. And then I was like, well, maybe I'm not, you know, fully content because I need to do like contemporary work. So I danced the ballet tech for a year.
That's
and
so
then
cool.
Yeah. I've taught for them and I know Elliot well. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh no, I think I just, this is not for me professionally. And there's so much like, and I know, you know, I know this is a newly ongoing conversation, which is a conversation that needs to be had, but about like mental health and how to allow a dancer to phase into a company professionally, because it's very different from going from a school and being a student and then being thrust into this like world. So I think for me at the time back, that was back in like 2001 or whatever. It was difficult like to go through that and to go through that on my own. And luckily I did have a friend like Misty. But I ended up going back to school and studying film and television. And I became a TV writer and producer for the past 18 years. And I think around 2015 or 2016, Misty and we had a conversation. I was like, you're doing so much with your voice. Like you're amplifying your voice. Like you should have a production company. Like, let's start a production company together. And she was like, I don't know what that would entail. And I was like, I don't either, but I know a little bit about production. Like, let's see what we can do. And so that started our journey. And I think like Misty said, like over the course of the pandemic was really when we buckled down and like figured out what we were trying to say and what we were trying to do with all of this. So yeah, Misty, like, do you want to say more about like what, what we're doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, it's always been difficult to see the way that ballet is perceived, how it's shown in film and on television and in media, because Layla and I have always felt like this is not a true representation of all of the layers and all that we are as artists and ballet dancers. You know, it's so one-sided and it keeps perpetuating the same tropes. And we want to show, like, I always say, I can't imagine, you know, a mother, parents watching The Black Swan and feeling like, oh, I want to put my child in ballet. Like, I feel like it's doing us,
sounds great,
right? It's doing us a disservice. And, you know, what are the stories we can tell within this art form and beyond on that are going to make people want to be a part of the arts and see the importance of it and see the value of it. And so it's kind of evolved from there. We definitely have a lot of dance content that we're developing, but beyond that, it's really, I think, about telling authentic stories that, you know, about women of color, of artists. So we've got a pretty big range of things that we're developing, but Flower, our short film that premiered, I guess 2 weeks ago now, maybe at Tribeca Film Festival, was really the first that has actually, like, we've seen through like mm-hmm. to fruition, and it's beautiful just how it came about during the pandemic, and I think that it's a really good representation of who we are and our voice as Life in Motion Productions. And that sets us apart. That's really unique. And I don't think we've seen storytelling in this way. And it's exciting. Yeah.
So you kind of developed this idea for the production company. You're talking about the stories you want to tell. You have ideas for projects. How does Flower become your first priority and your first output? And tell us kind of how the initial idea came about for this particular film.
Mm-hmm. Well, Misty had been performing, and Nelson George, who did the documentary A Ballerina's Tale about almost 10 years ago now, he had gone to see Misty perform. And afterwards, they had a conversation, and he was like, on stage, you're a storyteller and you're acting, right? And I would love to translate that onto the screen. Like, maybe that we can do like a silent film, you know, or play on a silent film. And so it sort of evolved from there. Then they came to me and we started, you know, developing this idea and figuring out what story we wanted to tell. It really came down to like, well, Missy, what story is important to you? What community is important to you? And we feel like, you know, ballets, classical ballets, full length ballets are stories that have a message and a theme, but they're all from like the 1800s, you know? And so a lot of times they're not relatable or they don't feel current. And so if the idea is to bring in new audiences to be exposed to dance and to be exposed to ballet, you know, it's very hard to do that if you're showing them something that they don't relate to. And mm-hmm. so we're focusing on this community in Oakland, California. Oakland is a city that's near and dear to Misty's heart. Her husband's from there. And she's been going for like 15 years back and forth. And it has this incredibly rich social, cultural awareness. Like the kids are doing youth activism, and there's all of these organizations that intertwine movement and art and music, and social justice. And so we were inspired by that community, but we also were like, well, what did they have to say? Like, what's going on in that community? So we went and did a research trip in Oakland, and we met with different organizations and kids and adults and the mayor. And we noticed that there's a huge housing crisis because of gentrification, first because of big tech in Silicon Valley, but it sort of permeated and now we're seeing it across the country. There's a lot of homelessness and houselessness. And so we wanted to figure out a way to show that story, but not from the perspective that you've seen on screen before, which I think we all have this idea that what a homeless person looks like from TV shows or movies. And it's always the same. It's like an older man of color, you know, wearing really scrappy clothes and kind of panhandling or something. And we're like, well, that's not the real story, because 40 million Americans right now are in danger of becoming houseless. So of those 40 million, they don't all look the same, you know, it can happen to anybody. And so we the story that is being told, Misty's character, she stars in it and it's absolutely incredible. It's about like a woman who is in danger of losing her home, her childhood home. And we ended up casting with Christina Johnson, the legendary Christina Johnson from Dance Theater of Harlem. We also have Babatunji Johnson, who they're not related, even though they're both Johnsons, but he has an incredible story himself, and he's absolutely incredible dancer. He moves like so fluidly, and he can do any style. He was self-trained. Now he dances a lot with Lions Ballet, but he choreographs as well. And he started with breakdancing, can do pretty much do anything. So the two of them were our main co-stars with Misty. And then we had people from the community be a part of the film. That was really important to us. Like, we're telling their story. We want them to be telling their own story. So we have turf dancers, which is another really interesting thing. Dance, you know, is universal, and every city has their own style of dance that they've created on the streets or, you know, in different communities and neighborhoods. And so there in Oakland, it's turf dancing. And so there's lots of turf dancers in the film. And we even feature some baby ballerinas. And so, yeah, so like that, it all sort of came together. I mean, it was definitely a difficult process doing it during COVID and during the pandemic. Lots of challenges and things like that, but that it came into this beautiful picture, and everybody we've shown so far, the film has really resonated on so many different levels, like whether it was just connecting so much with Missy's character and what she's dealing with in the film. Her mother has, Christina Johnson has dementia, you know, or if it was somebody who has experienced houselessness in their life, or just young kids who are loving dance and loving the music that we have in there. We had Rafael Sadiq did the music. So overall, like, it's been an amazing and rewarding experience to put the film out into the world, because we're like, wow, people like it and they get it. And like, you can make more of this kind of stuff.
I don't think it was even, I think that, you know, we've been, during the pandemic, we've been pitching many shows and developing many shows. So it wasn't that we were like, oh, Flower is going to be the first. It just happened to be first. And once we realized, you know, what it could be, we really put all of our focus into it. But it just happened to be the first one to develop and come to fruition.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Could we hear a little bit more about the filming process? You've already brought up it was during COVID, so there's just so much to dive into, like the logistics of that. And, you know, the story is, it's heavy business, you know, like that. Was it emotionally wearing on you guys as you're in the filming process? Kind of just go through what the day to day was like for us.
We're laughing because there's so many layers to it. And I think it's important for people to hear, you know, that nothing's easy in life. And and I think there's something so beautiful about going through the process like this. And when creating art, it makes you appreciate it more. It really allows you to like really dive in and understand the characters more. I think when you have the time and you're as hands-on as Layla and I have been as producers throughout the entire project, you know, I mean, of course I was in it, but we didn't kind of just step back as producers and let things happen. It was really collaborative, whether it was with Alonzo King, who was, you know, choreographer, our director, Lauren Feinerman, Rich and Tone, who were choreographers for the street dancers, or even just within the community, allowing their voices to be heard and really be a part of the story that we were telling. But Layla can, I guess, walk you through the process of like from beginning to end of what it took from raising the funds to finding the right team to the editing process. It's been a journey.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody told me, I think it was Mary Jo when we were at the Jacob Burns Center, but she said something like, she always says like, if you want to get something done, give it to a dancer.
Yeah.
I love that.
We like always find a way. Like there's something about, and I think that's so important too with like Missy and my story. Like I didn't continue on dancing in the ballet company, but the skills that I learned from being a classically trained dancer or dancer in general and being in a company and then going into, you know, another profession, like those skills, like they can take you anywhere. You know, it's that determination and that hard work ethic, the ability to like put on the blinders and like just go. So yeah, we did have a lot of challenges and a lot of stress, very stressful process, but I think I would encourage people to do something like this because you're not relying, you know, all of our other development that we're doing, we are, you know, it's like we have these gatekeepers who are telling us whether we can go or not. We're waiting for this green light all the time. And even when we get a green light, sometimes it doesn't end up working out. Like we're just constantly throwing coals in the fire because it's not, our fate is not in our hands. But with this, it was like, we did everything from start to finish. It made it so much harder, like so much harder, but like Misty said, like it feels so much more like gratifying, gratuitous because we did it all on our own and we made it happen. Like it was the only person who was going to do it was us. So it started with like fundraising, you know, which was very challenging. And I think going into it, Misty would always say, like, I want to make sure people don't think like we're these two little dancers, because that sometimes dancers get like pigeonholed in that way as well, because there's such a like hierarchical structure in the dance studio where you have your, your teacher or your coach, and then it's always like student teacher type of thing. So we can be very like, yes, yes, you know. And so this was really just like being a boss, like we're going to come in here and we're going to pitch you, and we want you to give us money to make this film and believe in what our idea is. So that was like, it was a learning process to even get to that point. And then of course, to get the enough money and funding to make the film was tough, especially during a pandemic when like no one knew what was happening. But we did it. And I think like, it's a testament also to Misty and her work ethic. Like, it's taken her through her whole career of being incredibly resilient, regardless of like how people may have viewed her, or stigmatized her, or thought that, you know, oh, we're not going to give you this opportunity. Like, she made her own opportunities and she figured it out. And she was constantly coaching me and cheering me on, which is so necessary. You always need to have somebody in your corner. And she was like, every time like something wasn't going right, she's like, it's okay. Just keep going. Just keep going. And so we did. And we got to the point where we raised the funds and we got to Oakland so that we could shoot a concept trailer, like not even like the full film, like something to get more money to make a full film. And we did it, and we put it together in like 72 hours. And we came back to New York City, and a week later, everything was shut down. It was like March, 7th, 2020. And then like March 13th, 2020, everything got shut down. But even there, like, we still buckled down during the time when everyone was just like at home, like, you know, binge watching shows and things. Like, we got on the computer and we're doing Zooms with people. And luckily people were like interested, and they were like, we want to see, we believe in you, Misty. And I guess we believe in you too, Layla, because Misty. But, and we want to see what you can make and what you can do, and to keep going. Like, so many people are like so supportive of Misty at this stage in her career, because it's like, she has already done so much, like, show us what else you can do. And this is the next iteration of that. You know, it's getting a film like this or exposure in more households and out there, so that people start to normalize this experience, this arts experience. And it doesn't become something that's niche or that you have to have been exposed to by your parent. You know, it's just like a community thing. So I think that those were all challenges getting us to that point and that process. And then like shooting was difficult, because again, it was during the pandemic. We had to pay a lot of money to do extra testing and safety procedures for COVID. We ended up getting a false positive on set and having to shut down the production for a whole day, which out of, 6 days, that was a big one for us. We lost a lot of, precious footage. And so then we had to regroup, and these are all these challenges and roadblocks that are happening, and we had to regroup and figure out how we were going to finish the film. So months later, we went back and we shot again. But at that time, Misty was pregnant. So we then had to figure out how we were going to shoot this.
Just shoot from, face up. That's it.
It was the big dance scene that we hadn't shot. So it was crazy. I remember Layla, we shot it at the Orange County Performing Arts Center. And which wasn't, we had a theater booked in Oakland originally, and it was a blessing in disguise. But I remember Layla arriving on the set and seeing me in this costume. And the first thing she was like, oh my God, your boobs are so big. And I was like, I know.
I was trying to get continuity.
I was just going to say continuity. Oh no. That's so good.
Yeah, I mean, those extra scenes that we had to go back and reshoot ended up being my favorite scenes in the whole film. I think that every time we had these challenges and these things that came up, like when we pivoted and we found a solution, as dancers do, it always turned out to be a better outcome. So it's always like, okay, happy accident. We'll find something better.
Your next project's going to feel so easy. You're going to be like, oh, we don't have to go through any of these hoops. Awesome. Baptism by fire with this one.
Yeah.
But the editing process to me, it was such a big learning curve, but also like really like gratifying, like to really be a part of, you know, that's another aspect of storytelling that mm-hmm. I'd never be like knew about in order to right. really appreciate. Mm-hmm. And then once we finally got something we were like happy with, then it was like, okay, well now we need to get it out there. And so, Layla went through the whole process pretty much on her own, submitting to all the festivals. And we came up against another issue, which we weren't really aware of when we made the film, but it's a long short. So it can't really fit into a shorts program within a film festival because it's 28 minutes long. We were very fortunate with Tribeca that they just fell in love with it and they decided to give us a standalone like premiere screening, which doesn't happen with shorts. So it was a really beautiful experience. And then they ended up finding a way. They made us the last in their shorts program, but it did take away like spots from a lot of shorts because we took a chunk of time. Mm-hmm. So we learned a lot. We learned a lot with right. this film. But really our intentions were to get it out there to as many people. We're doing a ton of screenings at different organizations and schools, public schools for children to be able to see it and see this form of storytelling. But, you know, we're looking for distribution and we're hoping that this would be the first episode in a series, you know, of using this form of storytelling with, you know, social justice and focusing on different communities and what they're going through in these communities and also highlighting the dance styles within these communities.
You guys are setting up free viewings. Is that right? If people listening wanted to try to do that in their community, tell us how they can go about it.
So we're working on social impact screenings across the country and maybe even internationally as well. If you go to @OaklandFlowerFilm, it's our Instagram handle. There is a link there that will tell you how to submit a request to be part of the social impact screening tour. And so they've been free. You know, there is also an option for us to make an appearance if we're able to. But really the point is to just get it out there, get this kind of content out there. The power of media, film and television and multimedia to shape minds. And it's like everything that we perceive about the world comes from what the content that we're taking in. So for us to tell these positive stories, but also expose people to the arts and specifically dance and ballet, it's really important. And we're hoping that this will be like really effective.
Right. Well, I think what you're doing is super important and beautiful, but I want to circle back to something that I feel like is equally important to this storytelling. And it's that you guys, like the amount of work that you've done, you put into it, but also I think it's important to know that people are successful and who are guiding these stories like you guys, you know, you do experience imposter syndrome. It's such a dancer thing, you know, that like you go back to that, like you said, like student teacher mentality, but that you bonded together and supported one another to push past that and to make this project happen. I think that's also a uniquely dancerly thing, but it is funny how we can just like kind of like gaslight ourselves into thinking that we don't deserve something or like we can't do something because we're so highly skilled in one arena. And then you kind of have an expectation that maybe like you have to be as good as that in other things, but it's okay to learn and to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we've been really, Missy and I have spoken about this a few times, but we've been really honest and straight forthcoming about that. This is the first time we're going through this process. And like, you know, I'm an Emmy winning TV producer and writer, like for 18 years, that's a long time, but I've never made a film. You know, and so we've been really like open with people about that. Sometimes people have taken advantage of that of us. And then other times people like it makes them maybe not, you know, have faith in us or have trust in us. But I think at the end of the day, like the support that we have for one another helps to keep us like on the track of like, we can get this done. And then I told Misty after Tribeca, I was like, this is we can do this. Like, this is easy. Like, not rocket science. Like, we got this. But it was only after going through the whole process of like experiencing it and learning it that I'm like, okay, we can do this now. Number one, we're moms. So we're superheroes already from that. Mm-hmm. And number two, we're dancers. We can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also it could be easy for people to think like, oh, it's Misty Copeland. Like she, the opportunities just fall in her lap. Like that might be something that people can think. And so I think it's so important to hear how much legwork you guys had to put in kind of regardless.
Yeah. It's been interesting. You know, it's not hard for us to have a door open for us and get a meeting.
Sure.
I'd say 90% of the time our experience has been that everyone shows up to those meetings because they want me to sign books for their kids and take pictures and that's it. And then nothing comes of it. And it's really just like a free opportunity for them to have like a meet and greet. And then, you know, maybe they don't, they don't know what we're capable of. And they, you know, and so, you know, it's just, we just have to keep going. You know, we had to take, you know, things into our own hands and really create something on our own and say, this is what we can do. This, and so that's why I think Flower is so special as our first film, because it's something that we did on our own. But going back to what you were saying about like imposter syndrome, I think that it's important to like recognize, the value that we bring from our experiences, that it, we may not have all the skills yet to do the specific thing, but we bring so much value from what we've learned as dancers, from what Layla has also learned as a writer and producer, and that there's so much to take from that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I loved what Layla said, where you're just like, I have an Emmy. You have to sometimes just like remind yourself, right? You're just like, yeah. I'm good. I have value.
Well, I bring up like the moment when we were trying to fundraise and somebody said something like, well, you're going to have a hard time fundraising because if people know you just had a baby. And I was just like, I remember being 50s, like, what? Like, I just had a baby. Like, I'm feeling really good about myself because I just had a baby. You know,
I can do anything.
That's like crazy. But I also think back to like when I was dance. I mean, I'll never forget one time when I was starting point work and my shoes, there was like blood coming through my point shoes. Right. Like, and I just kept going and like, you just keep like you blisters and all this, and you just keep dancing every day. You come into the studio, you're so sore. You're like, I can barely walk. I can barely climb the subway stairs to get to the studio. But once you get in the studio, you do it. And to get through that kind of like pain and mental strength, I think is like no other. Like, you can't tell me I can't do something at this point.
Right.
So good. I love it.
So Flower is just the first in what we hope are many productions. Can you tell us a few things you have in the pipeline right now?
Yeah. Layla, do you want to?
Yes. So we are really excited because we've been working for actually a couple of years now on a feature film about Maria Tolci. So that should be really exciting. And we've been doing like a lot of, we want to make sure we're really authentic to the story. And so we have some very important people as part of the project who will help us get to that authentic part. We're also working on some animated series. We're working on a documentary about Misty at this stage in her career, which I think is something that's so relatable to so many people. And just this iconic, you know, figure who has paved a path for so many and like, what's next? What's the next chapter? And what else, Misty? What else do we have on the list? We've got a bunch of stuff going on.
I'm like, there's a lot of things. I don't know what we can and can't talk about.
So I think that after a project like this that had so many hurdles that you had to overcome, it could have been possible to be like, okay, we've done that. Now we know what that's like. Check that off the bucket list. But it certainly sounds like you guys are even hungrier than ever to continue with this project. And so I think that's so great. And we absolutely look forward to seeing what you guys create in the future. But I just wonder overall what you hope that audiences take away from this beautiful film.
I hope that they see this form of storytelling and that they can relate to it and that they understand it and they see the power of dance and the power of movement and that it's universal, that they see the hope and resilience within this story, that it all comes back to everything that I'm always talking about is having a support system, having a circle of people around you that you trust and believe in you, and community is such a big part of that. And I think within this film, that it's really about community and knowing that you're not in this alone in this life and in this world. The beauty of movement and storytelling on film.
Layla, any last thoughts?
I agree completely what Missy said in terms of like the film itself. I think also like from the outside of the film, the story of how we made it and how we got it out there. I think that that is a great testament to all of the things she said about the film, like community and friendship and support, you know, belonging, like all of those elements. And then of course, like the homelessness issue, the housing crisis, like this is something that we all need to take a closer look at and see how we can help affect the change, you know, and how we're connected to these stories. And this is stuff that's happening in all these, you know, in our backyard. And so I hope that people just have some more empathy for this and see what, if they can help and join the cause.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. We hope all of our listeners go seek out the film, and we would love to have you back on to talk about any of your future projects. I mean, a Maria Tolci feature, sign me up.
Absolutely.
I'm a Maria stan. And thank you both so much.
I think the moral of the story is if you want something done, have a dancer do it. We're going to put it on a pillow, embroider it. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Conversations on Dance is part of the Acast Creator Network. For more information, visit conversationsondancepod.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.